to AWARE. We are dedicated to communicating information that inspires your positive growth and change. Are you interested in a peaceful planet? Are you interested in optimal health? Are you living with purpose? Are you enjoying your life? We realize each person can make a difference, and our mission is to empower your awareness. The choices that you make in every moment shape your life, and we encourage you to realize that you have your own answers and to always listen to your own truth. We invite you to stay aware.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the AWARE Show's Neuro Summit. This is Lisa Garr, and we have been having the most incredible time on this Neuro Summit. For those of you that have watched this through Google Hangout, it's been groundbreaking technology. What we've been able to pull off is, yay, is so exciting. And I just thank my team, who I couldn't have done any of this without, and bringing this all to you. We're getting the audio issues figured out, so hey, it's new. Be patient with us. But we've learned so much in the process about the brain. And also, for those of you that are listening on the phone, welcome as well. You can also move over to Google Hangout if you would like. And you do that by going to theawareshow.com/hangout. And you'll be able to see us there. So there is a little bit of feedback here, and I'm hearing it, but that's okay. We'll work that out in a second. And this is all about resilience, too, because that's one of the things we've learned a lot about the brain, is how quickly it is possible to make changes in the brain once you realize how it works. And that is what Dr. Joe Dispenza is joining us today to talk about. Dr. Joe is a neuroscientist. He's an expert on brain function and brain chemistry, and he is joining us live from Sydney, Australia. You see the Sydney Opera House in the background? Awesome. Hello, Dr. Joe. Can you hear me?
Hi, Lisa. I'm happy to be with you.
Oh, so great to have you here. So I think I need to fix the feedback. Let me just lower my speaker. If I can hear you, great. One more time, I'm just going to have you talk, Dr. Joe. Yep, I can hear you.
Oh, I'm here, Lisa.
Great. Okay, great. So fix that. So hello, welcome. Look at the beautiful opera house in the background.
Yes, Simon. It's 6 o'clock in the morning in Sydney.
6 a.m. Well, thanks for getting up so early to come and share time with us. I appreciate it. So if you could talk a little bit about what I mentioned just a second ago, how easy change can be in the brain once you realize that it is possible. Can you talk to us a little bit about the neuroscience behind that?
Sure. I think the hardest part about change is not making the same choice as you did the day before. And if you look at the model of change, there's always the old self, and the old self is made up of how you think, how you act, and how you feel. We'll call that a personality. And then there's the new self, which is made up of new thoughts, new behaviors, and new emotions. And getting from the old self to the new self, there's a void in between them. And the moment we no longer think the same way or act the same way or feel the same way, we step into what I call the river of change. That's the moment you no longer feel like yourself. And for the most part, when people start to feel uncomfortable, or it starts to feel unfamiliar, or they start to feel uncertain, or it's unpredictable, they begin to make the same choices that lead to the same behaviors, that create the same experiences, that produce the same emotions. And then they say, this feels right. Now that feels familiar. When we step into that river of change, that void, that unknown, is the perfect place to create from. And that void between the old self and the new self is the biological death of the old self. It is the neurological death of the old self. It's the chemical and literally epigenetic death of the old self. So people say, well, in the process of change, I can't predict my future. Well, the best way to predict it is to create it in that moment. And that requires then a little bit of knowledge to understand how the brain works.
I'm smiling because there's just this beautiful background going on with the boat behind you. I'm so, This is just a gorgeous, like, you look so beautiful there. I am remiss because people don't know a lot about your incredible healing journey. Joe, you shared it with me one day. Oh, my God, what you went through and how you healed yourself and how you learned that all of this is possible. Can you share with our new audience what you went through and what type of accident you were in?
Sure. And it kind of got me on this journey, and hopefully we can talk about how I started and where we are right now. But I had the privilege of being run over by a truck in a triathlon in Palm Springs, California.
Wow.
And I was on the biking portion of the race. I was in my early 20s, and there was a police officer on the corner waving me on to make a turn, but he had his back to the oncoming traffic. So the moment I merged with the traffic and made the turn, there was a four-wheel drive Bronco going about 55 miles an hour on the race on the track, and I got hit from behind. Long story short, I wound up fracturing 6 vertebrae in my spine, and one of the vertebrae was more than 60% collapsed, and I had bone fragments on my spinal cord, and the neural arch was broken. And I was facing paralysis at the time, and the prognosis was pretty poor. And 4 of the leading surgeons in Southern California basically said, if you don't have this radical surgery called the Harrington rod surgery, and that Harrington rod surgery is when they cut off the back parts of your vertebrae from the base of your neck to the base of your spine, and they screw in long stainless steel rods, and then they take some bone fragments from your hip and they paste it over the top.
Oh, my God.
And they hope for the best. So I had this principle at the time that said the power that made the body heals the body. And
Were you studying chiropractic at the time?
Yes, I was practicing in Southern California in La Jolla. And, you know, it was interesting because I think if it was anybody else, I probably would have said, go ahead and have the surgery. But this was me. And it was a moment where I had to really think, well, God, if these principles exist and there's intelligence within us that gives us life, maybe I could make contact with it. I'm not going anywhere. I'm not doing anything. I'm basically laying face down. So I said, I'm going to make contact with it and give it a plan. I'm going to give it a template. I'm going to give it a design. And then I'm going to surrender the healing to this greater mind. And at the same time, I'm not going to let any thought slip by my awareness that I don't want to experience. Now, that sounds really good, theoretically, but when you're facing paralysis, I didn't realize how unfocused I really was at the time. So I went through this process of reconstructing my spine and my mind, and every time I lost my focus, every time I became distracted, every time I noticed that I was thinking about if who was going to run my practice or if I should sell my house.
Or pain, or if you had any pain.
And if I brought my awareness back to the pain in my body, I would stop and start all over. I'd start the reconstruction process in my mind all over again. So it took me hours and hours and hours to finally get to the point where I was able to make it through and go through this this visual process. And so it took me about 4 to 5 weeks, and I realized that this consciousness, you know, that's within us, it has an awareness, and awareness is paying attention. So I began to notice that just like if you're not aware with your children or not present with your children, if it's had an awareness, it knows that we're not present. So I
right.
started really paying attention to my ability to be present, and in time, it got easier and easier.
It's
and
like
so
you had, it's like you had a master's in being a monk. I mean, you really learned mindfulness meditation on it at a boot camp level.
Well, I think it was more like the accelerated program, and I think, you know, in order for us to wake up, we need a wake-up call, and I think that was my wake-up call. And I was frustrated, and I was impatient, and I was afraid, but I had made the choice, and I didn't want to look back, so after about 5 weeks of a lot of struggle, all of a sudden something started to click and it started to get easier. And my attention span got better. I was more present. And what I didn't know at the time is that I was firing and wiring circuits in my brain that began to lay down really the tracks of my own personal healing neurologically. And then I started, what took me 2 hours to do, I was able to do in 45 minutes because I was creating a new level of mind. And so then I would start to think about, you know, walking again or watching a sunset or going to lunch with my friends or using a shower. And I would emotionally embrace what it would feel like. And I didn't know it at the time, but I was selecting a potential in the quantum field. And then I was emotionally embracing that future reality in the present moment. And my body began to respond as if it was in that reality. So it became very clear to me that I started to feel a lot better in a very short amount of time. And so in about 10 weeks, I was back on my feet and back into my life and
made myself
a deal. And I said if I was ever able to walk again, I'd spend the rest of my life studying this. And that's what I've been doing since 1986.
And you have avoided the surgery at the time, and you completely healed your spine with your mind.
Yeah, that seems to be the way it went. The end result was that I walked back into my life.
Yes, and now you are teaching others exactly how to do this and why it works. So you said that you realized in hindsight that you stepped into a quantum world. What is that quantum world, and how does that relate to the brain?
Well, I don't want to get too philosophical, but the quantum model of reality says that subjective mind has an effect on the objective world. That's the quantum model, and that that field of possibilities responds to how we think and feel. And so the quantum model says there's infinite potentials that exist simultaneously, and that our ability to select potentials and possibilities and then emotionally embrace that experience begins to change the brain and body to look like the event has already happened. And so I didn't know it at the time, but really what I was doing was I was changing my future. And
wow.
It takes a certain amount of consistent effort and observation to do it. So it was interesting because after I was back on my feet and into my life, the first thing that happened was I realized that I was a different person. And I couldn't relate to the people and friends in my life in the same way.
Interesting.
And it became very clear to me that I had to make some changes. And so I left Southern California and moved to the Pacific Northwest and started asking some really important questions about life and retreated from my life for a couple of years and became kind of a spiritual guy. And then I started to think about spontaneous remissions and how people do it. And so I traveled to 17 different countries and started to really ask some important questions about people that were treating with certain diseases and certain conditions, and they were staying the same or getting worse with those conditions, and all of a sudden they got better. And I wanted to know what the cause was that produced that effect. So I wrote a book called Evolve Your Brain, and in that book I talk extensively about the neuroscience of change and what those common principles were that allowed people to have spontaneous remissions from cancer and diabetes and rare genetic disorders that medical science had no solution for, and that began my journey into the neuroscience of change and transformation.
So fascinating, because there's so much that you just uncovered there. Not only when I started talking about the fact that change is possible, that you did the change, and now you're realizing that other people can make these changes as well if they realize the incredible potential and potency of the human brain and mind. Do you notice or use a distinction in your work with the difference between brain and mind? And you're getting kind of dark there, Joe. Is there any way we can get any more light on your face? Your beautiful background with the fairies is...
Oh, I see, yes.
So pretty, but we'll work on getting some light on your face. So did you notice, do you have a distinction between brain and mind?
I do. I think now if you're talking about it according to the neuroscience model, the brain is just an organ where there's 100 billion nerve cells. And where you have 100 billion neurons, piece together, you have the greatest amount of intelligence, the highest ability to learn, and the most level of awareness. So nerve cells possess the unique ability to store and communicate information between each other. So the brain is the area where there's the most number of nerve cells. Now, according to neuroscience, mind is the brain in action. Mind is the brain at work. And when you have these neurons that could fire in different sequences and different patterns and different combinations, whenever you make your brain work differently, you're changing your mind. So you have a mind to brush your teeth, you have a mind to drive your car, you have a mind to complain, you have a mind to interact on a television show. All of those different levels of mind are available to the brain because you're making different neurons work in different ways. Mm-hmm. So the Buddhist definition of mind really relates to, in the Western model, more like consciousness, that immaterial aspect of us, that 13-letter word that describes how we use the brain to produce different levels of mind. And because we can change the brain and we can make the brain change in different ways, it means there's what we learned in our research is that the brain can't change the brain and the mind can't change the brain. It's consciousness that changes the brain and mind.
Hmm. So consciousness is separate or inclusive of the brain?
Well, I think it's the epiphenomenon. I think it is what has dominion over the brain. And so when consciousness begins to manipulate the brain, or when consciousness begins to move through the brain, you produce different levels of mind. So it's within it and all around it is the best way to say it.
Okay. So can we talk about some of the neurochemistry and some of the brain chemicals that happen when you have change occur in the brain? What happens and how do you get that natural cascade? We've got to get some light on your face because now you're almost completely dark. Well, is your wife still in the room? There you are.
How's this?
A little bit better. There we go. Aha. Hi.
Hi.
Perfect. Perfect. Hi. Because I want to see you talk.
Hi.
That's great info. Okay, so neurochemistry. So in the brain, when you have these types of stressful thoughts, what happens in the brain when the stress comes in? And then how do you counteract that with your thoughts?
Well, I think most people, Lisa, wait for trauma or crisis or disease or diagnosis or loss to really make a decision to change. We usually reach our lowest denominator. We get knocked to our lowest level, and then we begin to examine the way we're thinking. We begin to notice how we're acting, and we begin to become aware of how we're feeling. So that process in neuroscience is called metacognition. And metacognition basically says, if you're paying attention to how you're thinking, it means you're no longer the program that's running the show. You're the consciousness now observing the program. And that's when you begin to objectify your subjective mind. So let's talk about feelings because that's really the nature of the question. Feelings and emotions are the end product of past experiences. And you can remember experiences better because you can remember how you're feeling.
So
when you're in the midst of an experience, everything you're seeing and smelling and tasting and feeling and hearing, all of your five senses plug you into the environment. And as you're picking up all that vital sensory information, that information rushes back to your brain and causes jungles of neurons to organize themselves into networks. The moment those neurons string into place, the brain makes a chemical, and that chemical is called a feeling or an emotion. So you can remember the birth of your daughter, you could remember your wedding day, you can remember a promotion, you could remember a specific event because you can remember how it feels.
Right.
So then most people live their life from the same emotions every single day. And if those emotions drive certain thoughts that turn on different circuits in the brain, and they begin to fire and wire the same patterns of neurologically,
right.
And those neurons then produce chemicals for us to feel exactly the way we're thinking and then think the way we feel. The redundancy of that cycle over time creates what I call a state of being. And a state of being is when mind and body are working together, when your thoughts and feelings are aligned to a destiny. So when a person decides to change, they have to break that chemical continuity.
Okay.
Between how they think and feel, and that's the level that they start to feel uncomfortable. Now,
okay.
If a person's doing that enough times, their body as their unconscious mind does not know the difference between an experience in their life that creates the emotion and the emotion that they're fabricating by thought alone. The body actually is believing it's in the past experience 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. The body's literally living in the past. Now, we could never create a new future when the body's actually in the past. So if everybody's feeling the same way every single day, it means nothing new is happening in their life. The process of change and breaking that chemical continuity is when the body begins to send signals back to the brain. That's when we say, I'm going to no longer complain and no longer blame and no longer make excuses and no longer feel sorry for myself. And all of a sudden, the body starts saying, hey, I've modified my receptor sites. You know, I'm the servant, and now you've trained the servant to be the master. And so the body starts sending signals back to the brain, and we've declared that we want to change, but 2 hours later, we'll start to hear this chatter in our head saying, you'll never change. It takes, you know, it's too hard. Start tomorrow. This doesn't feel right. That's the body as the mind trying to run itself back in control.
So here's a good example. One of the listeners in Delray Oaks is saying, how can you overcome a fear of change? So let's use fear of change as an example. It's a great example.
Well, the fear of change means you're going to step into the unknown. So if you're afraid to change, the biggest reason that people are afraid to change is because they can't predict what's going to happen. They'd rather hold on to their pain. They'd rather hold on to their suffering. They'd rather hold on to their confusion. At least it feels familiar.
Because it's familiar,
so then, if you understand that stepping into that unknown is the perfect, that void of uncertainty is the perfect place to create from, then as you're breaking the habit of your old self, if you're given the proper tools, then we could say then you can actually reinvent the new self. And if you already are creating that future, then you're less likely to be afraid of it if you've experienced it enough times in mind and body. So we have, in our workshops around the world, we have students doing the uncommon. We have students doing amazing things, and they stepped out from the familiar world into the unfamiliar world. And that fear they've turned around and used as a motivator to say, okay, I'm not going to stay here. There's a new future for me, and that fear really is keeping me connected to the past. So it takes a little knowledge and it takes a little information, but the most important element is actually giving people the opportunity to learn how. This is a time in history where it's not enough to know. It's a time in history to know how.
So one of the things that you talk about and one of the things that we're offering today in this special offer has a lot to do with meditation and how and why meditation works. I got to watch your video last night. I'm going to invite the listeners right now to go to the website, which is theawareshow.com/Dr. Joe, Dr. Joe, D-R-J-O-E. And if you look at that, there's first of all, this understanding the power of your mind video that Dr. Joe recorded that is all about this exactly what we're talking about, the science of changing your mind. And we're going to go through on this show here some PowerPoint slides that Joe has sent us so that you can really see inside the brain how this is working. But in the offer, he does a wonderful, wonderful series of meditations that you get by purchasing this offer. What is the value of meditation in the brain? How is that how you created, I mean, essentially the way you healed yourself, Joe, was mindfulness meditation. It's a fancy word for it, but it's what you were doing. You were present.
Well, I think being present is the first element of creation. In other words, most people, they spend the majority of their life anticipating their future based on their past. And we don't even know that we do that because we're doing the same thing as we did the day before. So when we started studying people and we started looking at the challenges that people have in their life, the majority of their attention is on their external world. It's on the people they know, the things they have to do, the places they have to go at certain times to create certain experiences.
Yep.
The majority of their awareness and their attention is on their external world. So then your brain is organized to reflect everything you know in your life. Your brain is a record of the past. So if you're waking up every day and you're seeing the same people and going to the same places and doing the same things at the exact same time, it's the external environment that's turning on different circuits in your brain, causing you to think equal to everything you know in your life.
Mm-hmm.
That's what keeps the dance between the outer world and the inner world the same. When we talk about meditation, we're asking the people to eliminate their external environment, to decrease the stimulation from their external world, put their body away so that they're no longer putting their attention on their physical body, and have the ability to become so present that you lose track of time. So true transformation happens when you get beyond your environment, your body, and time. And something amazing happens to the brain once you start to do that. It begins to get very organized. It begins to get very coherent. It begins to get very integrated. And the chemicals of stress that you asked about earlier tend to be shut down because you're no longer preoccupied with your external world, and your inner world now becomes more real than your external world. The moment that happens, there's a very significant biological change that happens in the brain. Very naturally, and as a result of all of that, your brain does not know the difference between the outer world and the inner world. Your body does not know the difference between the outer world and the inner world. So what you're imaging, what you're rehearsing in your mind, what you're planning in your future, what you're visualizing, what experiences you're embracing, your brain and body will physically begin to change neurologically and genetically, so that when you get up from your meditation, you're not the same person who sat down. So that is the aim, that you have it, you remind yourself of who you no longer want to be, and you remind yourself of who you do want to be. The word meditation literally means to become familiar with. So when you become familiar with your unconscious self, and you become familiar with a new self, you fire and wire new circuits in your brain that represent the new self, you emotionally embrace a future. You do that enough times, you'll become familiar with that state of being. If you're aware of your unconscious thoughts and you make them conscious, you pay attention to your habits and behaviors, and you notice the emotions that you've memorized that keep you connected to the past, and you become so conscious and familiar with them that you never go unconscious, now you're understanding the word meditation. So the purpose of meditation is to change your state of being, and then maintain that modified state of mind and body your entire day. That's the goal, to be greater than your environment, to be greater than your body, and to be greater than time.
Yes, and then life starts to flow, and you have ease and space, and you're not living at the effect of your life. Instead, you are affecting your life. Now, these PowerPoint slides that we're about to take a look at, and Joe, what you're talking about here is very well illustrated in these slides. Also, it is illustrated in all of Dr. Joe's special offer. The meditation practices are the practice of what it is that we're about to learn and that we've been learning during this call. And so those are located in the offer, which is theawareshow.com/Dr. Joe, which is D-R-J-O-E. And that's the meditations are in there, the whole entire lecture of exactly what the science of changing your mind is all about. So let's take a look at these slides, if you don't mind. I'm clicking around here to find them. Okay. What is it? Oh, there we go. It's right there on the Hangout. What is it we're looking at?
Well, let's talk about how we arrived at this. After I studied spontaneous remissions from disease, and we wrote Evolve Your Brain, from the movie What the Bleep and from people reading my book, the most common question people ask is, how do you do this? How do you change your mind? How do you create the life you want? So now that I understood what the common principles were that people had in their own personal transformation, the next question was, can we teach it?
Mm.
So we started teaching workshops around the world, and for 2 years, Lisa, we didn't get many results. We got small little changes here and there. And then after about a year, we started getting a lot of emails, people saying, hey, I have this health condition, I got better, and I no longer live with this type of pain. And we started getting people saying, my cancer went away, my diabetes went away, my lupus went away, my MS went away.
By doing
the meditations.
Wow.
They were literally signaling new genes and new ways in changing their state of being. So when that started happening, that was the moment in my career where I began to realize that I was actually making a difference in people's lives, that they were literally in the process of transformation, and I was getting the feedback that it was possible. So then from that point, we started teaching advanced workshops, and in the advanced workshops, we started having people stand up and literally say, hey, my leg has been paralyzed from MS for the last 25 years. I have feeling in my leg just from that meditation. Hey,
oh
I had
God.
Food allergies for 30 years. I lived on lettuce. Now I can eat whatever I want. You know, I've had this chronic pain for 15 years.
Wow.
The pain is gone. So we started noticing that the transformations in our workshop were happening in real time, like right during the event. And one of the workshops we had 7 people healed from some type of chronic condition.
What?
So the moment that happened, I started to say, okay, we got to measure this now. If it's happening in real time, we have to measure it. So I organized an advanced workshop where we brought in a neuroscientist named Jeffrey Fannin, who's a dear friend of mine and a great colleague, and we brought in a physicist from Russia, Dr. Konstantin Korotkov, and we started to look at objective changes from subjective mind. We started to want to know what was going on in people's brains right during the meditation. We wanted to know if there were changes in energy in the room, and we wanted to know if in any way there was any change in the field around people's bodies. And these particular slides show some of the research that we were able to produce as a result of some of our advanced workshops to prove that people can do the miraculous and do the uncommon.
Brilliant. So this one basically is scientific evidence, and what we're about to see is the evidence of brain mapping that shows changes in the brain during meditation. Okay, we'll go to the next slide here. The next slide is in the field of energy during the meditation. Sorry about that. I'm catching up here. There we go. Take a look at that one.
Okay, so if you look at that slide, we're measuring the energy in the field, in the ambient space in the room. From the first day, you can see that it's about 3,800 joules, which is kind of a low level of energy. By the third day of the workshop, the energy went up to 5,200 joules, over 5,200 joules. In other words, there was a very palpable, significant change in the electromagnetic field in the room. And
wow.
The physicist that was measuring it with his instrument said that he had never measured those type of changes in 20 years of measuring the field. So people were actually contributing to and adding to the energy of the room, and that was actually measurable. So quantum field had strong fluctuations, and we were able to measure in 3 days those type of changes. So very strong, significant change. And from day one to day four, we don't have day four on there, it was higher on day four, but it significantly rose every single day because people were literally letting go of their past, letting go of unwanted emotions, and they were turning it into pure energy, into the field.
Wow. And the meditations that you use are the ones that are in this special offer or a variation of them. There are several meditations in this offer. Very, you chose these on purpose, right? These were intentional meditations for the effect that you created?
Yes. The offer that we want to provide for people is to give them an introduction to understand the process of change, and then at the same time, once they have a good understanding of that, how they can begin to apply it to their life and use some of the same principles that we'll show in these slides to make the same changes for themselves.
Okay, great. All right, so the next slide we have changes in the chakras in the meditation, before and after.
Yeah, what we do is we have a sophisticated, brilliant photography machine.
Oh, sorry, say that again.
There's a very sophisticated machine that we used in this event. It's like a sophisticated Corellian photography machine. And that machine measures the field around the body, and it measures the energy centers, the chakras, whatever you want to call it. And if you look at a Kirlian photography machine that was back in the 70s and 80s, and you look at this one here, it would be like a bicycle to a Porsche. This is a very, very technologically advanced Russian machine.
Constantine created it, right? I know
Constantine Kratkov is the deputy director of the Department of Physics, University of Russia, St. Petersburg. Smart guy. And I wanted to bring this machine in because I wanted to show that if we begin to change our internal state, then there should be some objective measurements in our hormonal systems, which are what the energy centers of the body are, and at the expression of energy from these centers. So we do specific meditations to align these centers, and as you can see a person whose centers are off, and then after a 45-minute meditation, their centers tend to be more aligned and more physically robust. And I asked Constantine, can you do that with your conscious mind? And he said, absolutely not. You have to enter into the autonomic nervous system. You have to enter into the operating system to make these changes. So that's one example of someone who had a pretty nice change in 45 minutes.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Let's go to the next slide here. So, again, this is more of changes in the chakras and meditation.
We'll get to the brain changes in a minute.
Sure. No. And this, again, someone's asking. These were the changes after your meditation that they did, or they could do it in any meditation, but it's mostly the ones that you did, right, in the class?
Yeah, all of the changes were in as a result of a workshop that we did, and it was the meditations that we instruct people specifically for. And so they're designed to change the body's energy. They're designed to change the hormonal systems. They're designed to change genetic expression.
Wow.
Very specific.
Wow. Very specific. Okay, great. All right, so now going back into the changes in the chakras in meditation before and after, what's the difference here in this?
Well,
slide?
You can see a person in this particular slide having the same effect as the previous person. The chakras are not aligned. They're not physically enlarged. And after a 45-minute meditation, you can see a nice alignment as well. That is physical evidence to let people know that what they did in their internal world produced an effect in their external world, and their hormonal systems became more aligned, more integrated, and healthier.
Fascinating. Okay. All right. So now this is interesting. This next slide is about, if you could explain, the changes in coherence in meditation.
Yes, one of the things that we know is that when you're living in stress and you're living in fear and you're living in sadness or you're living in anger, hostility, or aggression, the chemicals of stress cause the brain to become highly incoherent. It causes different compartments of the brain that normally talk to each other to divide against themselves. And if you were to measure brainwave patterns from someone who is stressed, those brainwave patterns are of what we call hypercoherent or hyper incoherent. The brain is working way too hard. And what we typically do as human beings is we tend to analyze our life within the emotion that we're experiencing. And what we found from our research is that the moment we begin to analyze our life within the emotion that we're experiencing, we drive the brain further out of balance. So this
really?
Is an example of somebody in one meditation who was able to silence and quiet down those analytical thoughts. And the moment we get beyond the body, the environment, and time, it's like the brain recalibrates. There is an immediate moment where all of a sudden the brain becomes highly coherent, highly organized, and different compartments of the brain that were no longer talking to each other begin to communicate. So what syncs together links together. And this is a great example of someone who is extremely out of balance in their brain and in a one-hour meditation has a sense of wholeness, a sense of peace, a sense of clarity, and a very, very clear sense of self.
So that critical self-judgment thinking actually makes you stupid. what you're saying.
Well, I'll tell you what it does, though. What it does is it drives the brain further out of balance. And so the hormones of stress, when they're circulating in our body, what happens is we tend to become preoccupied with things in our environment. We become over-focused on our body, and we obsess about time. Because that's what those hormones do. If you're being chased by a lion, it's not a time to create. It's not a time for growth and repair.
Right.
It's not a time for long-term building projects. It's emergency.
Wow.
And so most people spend the majority of their life living in emergency, and the chemicals of stress cause us to analyze our external world and begin to try to predict the future based on the past. And that kind of limited thinking drives the brain and body further out of balance. Now, the key with all of this is that human beings can make thought more real than anything else. And because we can think about some future scenario based on the past, we can turn on the stress response just by thought alone. And that's when we get in trouble, because we spend the majority of our life turning our brain and body out of balance just by thinking about the worst case scenario. And that's when disease starts to manifest.
So this is fascinating. So before the next question, if you could just move over a little bit more, because now you're completely dark, because I still want to see your face. That's right. Perfect. Okay, so the next slide that we have here, and this is a great slide, because one of our questions coming in is, dear Dr. Joe, my husband has Parkinson's and doesn't believe in any of these types of teachings. My question is it possible to influence the production of dopamine in someone's brain? Now, this next particular slide is one of a Parkinson's patient's before and after meditation.
Okay, I want to address this very specifically, and I want to address it on two levels.
First of all,
if your husband believes that nothing will work, then he's right. Nothing will work. Because the research that's been done with people with Parkinson's disease, and you can research the study, where they took a group of people and they told them that they had a new antidote for Parkinson's disease, and they gave him a saline injection, a salt and water injection, and more than half the people who got that injection responded significantly, where all their symptoms of Parkinson's went away.
Really?
Now, Parkinson's disease, there's a deficiency in dopamine. The brain, an area of the brain, the basal ganglia, is not making the proper production of dopamine. So when that happens, the neurons in the brain, they're called upper motor neurons, they're not firing properly. There's a disintegration. They're static. And that type of disintegration causes involuntary muscle tremors, like pill rolling or intention tremors or walking problems called festination gait or steppage gait. So there's issues with people controlling their physical body. And they can't change that with their conscious mind. So when they gave these people the saline injection, as they began to believe that the injection would help them, unbeknownst to them that it was a placebo, they began to pick a possible future. And as they picked a new future of the thought of them being well, and then embracing what it would feel like to be well, they literally moved into a new state of being. Now, the research in this study showed that these people produced about 200 times the amount of dopamine that they normally would produce.
Through visualization?
By believing in the idea that they could get well. That's it. So.
Wow. Wow, amazing.
So here's the question. Do you need to put your belief in a saline injection to move into a new state of being? And the answer is no. So in this particular slide, we had a person in our workshop that had all the symptoms of Parkinson's disease. If you look on the left-hand side, the brain, all that red, the brain is working way too hard. There's a very strong incoherence going on in the brain. Their brain is not at rest, it's overstimulated, and because of that, they're having difficulty in controlling their physical body. At the end of 4 days of the workshop, this person produced a normal brain, and her intention tremors literally went away. They disappeared.
Wow.
Now look at the next slide. If you look at the next slide.
Okay. Changes in Parkinson's disease after meditation. And again, these meditations are available on the special offer. Every single guest we've had on talking about neuroscience talks about meditation. This is so powerful. Okay, keep going.
So now take a look at this particular slide. You don't have to be a brain scientist to figure this out. But people with Parkinson's disease, you see all of that blue on the left-hand side? That blue means the light bulb has gone from 50 watts to 10 watts. There's very little energy in the brain. The brain is very, very dulled down. There's a hypocoherence in the brain. In other words, not a lot's happening. At the end of 4 days, all of that green represents a normal brain.
Wow.
So this person moved from three standard deviations from normal, where the brain was literally shut down, to a normal brain in 4 days. And once again, all of her physical symptoms diminished significantly.
Hmm.
That person did not believe in the saline injection. That person said, if I can pick a potential that exists in the quantum field called me being healthy and emotionally embrace what it would feel like to be that, the thought married with an elevated emotion or intention married with an elevated emotion or how you think and feel creates a new state of being. So when we expect a future possibility, we're moving into a new state of being. So instead of expecting your Parkinson's to be there every day, why don't you expect it to not be there every day? And how is that possible? So when we started doing the research in our events, we had so many people being healed that we had to say there's got to be measurable evidence in their brain. And so this is the 4-minute mile. Soon as someone's able to break the 4-minute mile, it gives you permission to break the 4-minute mile also. And we're starting to see more and more folks do this without any placebo, without any drug, without any electrode, by just changing their state of being. That's how powerful meditation is.
Oh, my God. That's absolutely incredible. Thank you so much for sharing this with us. Just to intentionalize a possible future. So first of all, I just want to mention, to see these slides again, just watch the replay, because we're going to have the replay of this. Share the replay with your friends, because I want to get through. We have several more slides to go through, so this is great. Someone is asking about ADD. Can you actually use, what did they say, meditation to, does this work with ADD brains? Because sometimes you can't focus on
mm-hmm.
what it is that the potential future would be.
Yes, we've seen in, we don't have the slides here, but we've seen plenty of, well, first of all, everybody has ADD to some degree.
Yeah.
Because the more stressed you are, the more you live by the hormones of stress, the less your attention span is. So this is how you and I have been trained to pay attention. Remember when we were growing up, your mother said, watch the car, tie your shoes, you know, go down the steps one at a time. Have kind of an emergency attention. So we were taught, like, pay attention on the object, pay attention on the thing, and put a little adrenaline with it. And that's how people think attention really works. Turns out that when we do that, it's only a short attention span because the hormones that are associated with that literally just give the brain a boost for a second, and then there's quiescence. It quiets down. The type of attention that we teach our students is to open their awareness, open their focus. And when they begin to use, instead of a divergent focus, but instead of a convergent focus, a divergent focus, that begins to cause the brain to get very, very healthy. And the frontal lobe begins to light up, and we found out that attention is a skill, just like golf or tennis.
It's a the more you practice it, the better you get at it. That's
exactly
why I like the guided visualizations and the guided meditations, because I need a little help sometimes. To the words that you choose and all the intentionality and the music, everything that you do helps me. I'm a big fan of the guided visualization. I can do it on my own now, but I like listening to it because I don't have to think. All right, so let's look at the changes
right, so,
in traumatic brain injury patients after meditation. That's
meditation,
a whole new thing. This happened to me. This is really fascinating.
This is a great case history, and for the most part, it's unbelievable if you if you have an interest in the story. This is a person who had a traumatic brain injury that wound up going through the windshield, severing his spinal cord, having a serious brain injury. And when he started in our work, he was paralyzed from the nose down. And that was about 4 years ago. And over time, he was able to go from being paralyzed from his nose down to moving his hands, to controlling his bladder, and started having some very, very profound changes in his health. But this is the first time that we actually measured his brain. And again, you can look at the left side, and you can see a very dulled down, hypocoherent brain. In other words, again, if you had a dimmer switch, you can take the dimmer switch and turn it all the way down to low. The light bulb is very dull in the brain, and that's what happens with traumatic brain injury. Now, in 4 days of meditation, in a very short amount of time, his brain got very close to normal. So close to normal that he started having profound physical changes in the spinal cord injury. He started having more motor control in his legs. Now, that did not happen because of chemistry. That did not happen because of hardware. That did not happen because of circuitry. That happened because of the energy in the room that he was drawing from.
Oh,
in other words,
no.
Remember the first slide. It was at a very low level of energy the first day, a very high level of energy both third day. That's available energy for you and I to use to draw from. So the changes that happened in his brain and body biologically was not coming from chemistry. It was coming from energy. He changed his energy. And when he changed his energy, his body began to respond to a new mind. So that's a brain that is a significant traumatic brain injury where he's processing very little data, very little information, and 4 days later, the light bulb goes up, and he's very aware of himself and his life. He's very aware. He's tuned back in.
So you did the same thing, so you know that that's extremely possible. How many hours of meditation did he have to go through in order to get this, and does it require other people to be in coherence with you in order to see these types of effects?
Absolutely not. So there's no law here. This particular person, he had those changes in 3 days. And we in our workshops, if you come to my workshop, we're not going to sit around and talk.
I know.
When you come to my workshop, you're going to change beliefs and perceptions about yourself and your life. You're going to recondition your body to a new mind. You are going to unfold into possibilities in the quantum field. You're going to be in and out of meditation all day long. And we expect to see changes when that occurs. Why else would we do this, right?
Right.
So this particular person there was a meditation morning at 6 o'clock in the morning. There was a meditation before lunch, and there was a meditation in the afternoon. And so he did a series of meditations in the workshop, and that is a very significant change. So if you look at the next slide here, again, you're seeing his brain very blue, very, very dulled down, very hypocoherent, and those green pictures on the right-hand side, green is normal. And so at the end of this event, I know this is probably incredible for most people, he stood up only for a short period of time, but he was that confident and that clear, and boy, we made a change in his life.
Absolutely incredible. By the way, that workshop, a workshop that Dr. Joe teaches is on the special offer, and I'm going to pull that up again if we can. If you look at one of the slides below on the Google Hangout, you can see what the offer is here. If you go to theawareshow.com/dispensa, it's also there. Where did I put it? There is Dr. Joe's intensive workshop that's on this offer, and it's incredible. I mean, this is his how many hours is that particular workshop? It was intense, but it was great.
7 hours. It's the introductory workshop.
And he keeps you constantly engaged, constantly enrolled, going through meditations, explaining all the things and why the brain works, why you keep repeating a lot of patterns in your life, and then how to interrupt those patterns, and then go through the visualization. So in this offer, which is really great, you'll get to see a 7-hour workshop on exactly what we're talking about. Then you will get the meditations, and there's 4 different meditations, and they're really stunning. They're, I mean, obviously, They must be some type of magical meditations of what you've told us, Joe. And then
actually,
there's also the book, yeah?
Actually, it's nothing magical about it, but what we do know is that the more people understand what they're doing and why, the better the results we get. So I like to demystify meditation from the quantum field to the neuroscience to the neuroendocrinology to the gene to the cell to the expression of protein. I like to go all the way down, and so when people sit down and they do their meditation, there's nothing left to conjecture. They know exactly what they're doing and why, and when they have intention behind it, it works better, bottom line.
That's huge, intention behind it. All right, I want to go back to the PowerPoint slides and look real quick. Okay, so the next one is changes in balance in meditation. You mean meditation gives you a better balance?
Well, one of the things that most people don't know is that most people lateralize to one hemisphere or the other. If you look at that third level, the third row there, in the second group on the right, you can see that there's an equal balance between two sides of the brain. Now, our whole goal as human beings is to create wholeness, the expression of intelligence or divine intelligence through us. And when that happens, when you start to see both hemispheres working together, that psychic union of two hemispheres creates the emotion of love. All of a sudden, you start falling in love with yourself. You start falling in love with life. All of a sudden, your brain starts making this wonderful elixir called oxytocin, and oxytocin gets into the amygdala, which is that part of the brain that's always angry and fearful and obsessing, and it literally blocks the receptor sites from fear. It blocks the receptor sites from hostility and aggression. It blocks the receptor sites for guilt and sadness, and the only thing that's left is this immense sense of love. And so when we see that kind of coherence where both hemispheres are working together, you see a person coming out with a very big smile on their face.
Nice. Beautiful. I can absolutely see that. I can absolutely see that. All right. So we're just, wow. I want to go to the slide with the brain with mind chatter. What the brain on mind chatter looks like. This is your brain. This is your brain on mind chatter. It's
right. Unbelievable
what the brain looks like. It's a scrambled mess.
when you see a brain that's chattering too much, and in this particular slide, hopefully we'll get to a few more after this, but a brain, you see that red, that means the person is using their own program of thought thinking to try to change the program of thinking. They're using their ego to try to change their ego. They're using the brain to try to change the brain, and as we said earlier, the brain gets out of balance. The moment we stop all of that thinking, take a look at the next slide. The moment we get beyond the analytical mind and there's a change in brain waves, in a very short amount of time, you're going to see a brain that gets very happy and healthy. All that blue and all that green.
Wow.
Somebody who's chilling out, who's in the present moment, they're not preoccupied about anything. There's a sense of peace. They're spontaneous, they're poised, they're creative, they're clear, and they're very joyful in the moment. They're really happy in the moment.
So, Cliff, we're going to go through rapid-fire slides here. So just pull up the next slide as you keep going, and we'll talk to them because there's about 10 more slides that I want to get through if we can.
If we get through five, I'm happy.
Okay. Well, that's the brain during bliss. That's what bliss looks like during meditation, which is amazing.
Yes, amazing.
If you look at the third level, third row, and you see those red areas, those two particular brain, that particular period of brainwave patterning, that person is all of a sudden, that red area is energy starting to move into their brain. That's when they're starting to get a real strong level of energy. That's the light bulb going up to 50 watts, and they're getting a surge of information into their brain, and they're getting they're feeling pretty alive.
Wow.
Now go to the next slide.
Okay. The next slide.
Take a look at this person. This person experienced an enormous amount of bliss in her meditation. You can see her brain before meditation. You can see her brain during meditation. But take a look at the next slide.
Full on. Full out ecstasy during meditation. Oh, my God.
Now take a look at the difference. Look at this particular slide. That
the red.
The red means it's energy. this person, we were watching her brain, maybe we'll see in the next couple of slides, she had such a level of energetic shift in her brain. Her brain went from a very normal level of alpha to all of a sudden a very profound level of theta, and then she went into a very, very high level of awareness, a high level of gamma brainwave patterns. And when Jeffrey, the neuroscientist, and I were looking at her brain in real time, we said, she's got to be the happiest person in the world. And we turned around and looked at her in the middle of a meditation, and she had tears running down her face, and she was in ecstasy. And we were able to capture that.
Wow, how amazing. So it makes such a neurochemical difference in the brain. I mean, it really, really, truly impacts the question earlier about the dopamine release. I mean, is this dopamine, serotonin? What is it that you see? What is it?
Well, and first of all, you are your own pharmacy, and you get to regulate those chemicals within your brain and body. It's just how you want to manage your energy, how you want to manage your world. So in this particular case, we could say then there's a very strong level of serotonin in her brain. There's probably a good amount of oxytocin going on in there. She's got a great batch of chemicals happening, and her brainwave patterns are super, super coherent. As a matter of fact, she came to our last advanced workshop, and we were capturing 10 times the amount of normal in her brain. The machine could not calibrate what this person was doing and by the way, after she did that, we had about 6 or 7 people during the workshop do the exact same thing. And the neuroscientist Jeffrey and I, we could not get the smile off our face because these are normal people. They're not Buddhist monks. They're not nuns. They're common people that understand that it's a skill. And when you begin to understand how to regulate it, you begin to have some pretty profound effects in yourself and your life.
Well, that's what we're here to do is thank you so much for teaching all of this. And I want to call people's attention again to the offer here that we have that Dr. Joe's put together for us. He's joining us from Sydney, Australia, and there's the beautiful bay and the Sydney Opera House. Yeah, we'll have you pan over there in just a second because it's the most photographed place in the world.
Talk about
ADD here. I love it. But what you did in this offer was amazing because you gave us every single thing that you're talking about. It the seven. Go to theawareshow.com/Dr. Joe, which is DRJOE. There's a 7-hour workshop that Dr. Joe did, and he this whole workshop is live streamed, so it's a video workshop. You'll be able to download that right away, and PDFs and everything that goes around that entire workshop, experiential workshop, taking you through meditations, and then you get the actual meditations as well, the tracks of several different meditations, guided meditations. I listened to them last night. They're wonderful. They're beliefs and perception meditations, which is every single thing that Dr. Joe's talking about. We are our beliefs. And you can actually go into the potential future, which I love that term, Dr. Joe, the potential future, and rearrange the neurochemicals in your brain. And do that through visualization. That's what's helpful. That's what's guided here. There's one on breath. There's one on creating coherence that you saw in the slides, and changing beliefs and perceptions. Just to have your guidance on this is incredible because of your history and your experience and what you've seen work in these workshops. These are very, very powerful meditations. And then you can get money off going to the next experiential workshop, going to the next workshop yourself, and taking this, bring your family, bring the people that you know have illnesses, bring the people that you are the most stubborn and say, hey, this is, if you have a pessimistic view of the world, come in here and let me show you what that does to your brain. Come in here and let me show you what this does to your brain. So it's a wonderful package that you put together, and I thank you so much, and thank you for joining us from Sydney, Australia, and for your time, and just for your passion, Joe, just for your passion to want to get this information out to the world.
Thank you.
Yes.
I'm very happy doing it.
Yes, I can tell. I can tell. This is your purpose. You're right on it here with everybody. And thank you for your time. Thanks for getting up so early in Sydney.
No worries.
And that's it. So, all right. So, once again, if you go to the replay that you're going to get in your email after this, you'll be able to show your friends the slides and forward it to friends, and you can share it, and you can just forward on the replay. And also to get the actual That's to get the PowerPoint presentation, and to get the offer, you go to theawareshow.com/Dr. Joe, and he has all of this information wrapped into this offer for you, the classes, the meditations, and everything. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. What's one of your favorite two-minute meditations, or maybe even 30-second meditations? What do you say to yourself to get yourself into a place of coherence, Dr. Joe?
I usually ask myself, what is the greatest ideal of myself that I can be in this moment? And I work on not getting up until I am that person.
Well, you can get up now. Great job. Thank you so much for all the information and the clarity. Appreciate it. Take care. We want to see the lighthouse one more time. I mean, the opera house one more time. Can you take us over there? Sydney, Australia, we love you. Thank you so much. It's a beautiful shot. God, that's a gorgeous shot. Until next time, I invite you all to stay aware.